Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Manchester Is Red podcast. My name is Stephen Railston and we're recording this episode on a Monday morning at 11:45 roughly. 2 days after Manchester United were defeated 2-1 against Fulham at Old Trafford on Saturday afternoon, of course. In today's episode, we'll get into that performance, the good, the bad, the ugly. Look ahead to the FA Cup game against Nottingham Forest in midweek. And then that's about it, really. But I'm joined by Samuel Lucas, of course, for this episode. How are you, Samuel?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Pretty chip. I mean, the sunshine, isn't it? Which is quite rare, but the weather seems to be improving. We know our podcast listeners tune in for our weather conversation, of course. Samuel, look, a disappointing performance, a really disappointing performance. United had been undefeated in 2024, of course. A string of really positive results. They moved up the table. They had a feeling of momentum behind them, but this was another setback.
Big setback in the... When you get a late equaliser and then there are 9 minutes of added time, signaled, you think, okay, we're two steps in. The third step is the Fergie time winner. There was a Fergie time winner, but it went to the opposition, and I don't think that's happened very often at all. I remember Patrick Van Aanholt doing it for Crystal Palace a few years ago, but this one was particularly galling for United in that it was probably the easiest fixture they had in February, and they of course have been winning. I wouldn't say they've been convincing in those wins, but if you're on a run of four or five wins on the spin, then there's bound to be confidence around the place. That confidence was, in fairness, deflated on Friday with the Hoyland news. I think a lot of us just thought, yeah, they're not going to win on Saturday. And even when I looked at the team sheet and saw no Paulinho and Willian, and that was my fault, I didn't realise Paulinho was suspended or Willian would be out, I still didn't have the sense of confidence that United would win this game. There were just some selections that you think, well, Fulham can get them there, and Fulham did get them. And we'll get into a hell of a lot about them, but even just this, the way United's approach... It doesn't exist. Their best period of football on Saturday was between the equaliser and Iwobi's winning goal. There was no method to it. There was no structure to it. It was just thrive amid the chaos. It was get swept up in the wave of emotion. I noticed that Garnacho and Fernandes seemed to celebrate the added time more gleefully than the actual equaliser because they thought it was coming. Rich turned to me and said, "It's coming." And at that point, normally you're buried in your head's buried in a laptop and you rewrite things. But I thought, no, actually, I'm gonna prioritise the spectacle here. And even the near misses when Leno made a couple of saves or McTominay pulled it well wide, there wasn't a sense of, like, United fans were obviously in agony at it, but they knew that there was another chance coming because they felt it was coming. And they've had their late winners this season. They've had their 80-something minute winners this season. But that approach is unsustainable. You could probably only get away with those in a successful season about five times, I'd say. You know, United had a hell of a lot of late goals under Sir Alex Ferguson across 20-odd years. but they were spread across 20 odd years. It wasn't something that was happening two or three times a month, or two or three times within a 3 month period. And that's been United this season. There has been this element of drama. And when I saw Toby Collier, when I was told that he was going to be in the squad, I thought that's great for him, but there's absolutely no chance he's getting on in today's game, because the game would have to be boxed off for him to have the opportunity to become number 250. And it's extremely disappointing for United that they did revert to type, in that the striker is unavailable. The striker has been scoring goals while they've been winning. Who's the identity of the goal scorer at the weekend? It's a defender. Is Marcus Rashford going to hack it up front? No, he's not. The only outfield player who turned up was Garnacho. He was by far and away their best player on Saturday. I thought Onana did all right as well. But apart from those two, it was a really poor, complacent performance as well. You said, obviously, they've had a lot of Saturday 3pm kickoffs at Old Trafford this season, which is what supporters want. But the atmosphere was moribund. Apart from the set of supporters to our right next to the Fulham fans, and they'd only been relocated there because Fulham hadn't taken up their full allocation. So obviously Fulham are rightly revelling in this brilliant win they've had. First Old Trafford win since October 2003, and they were worthy winners. But they didn't even have enough. They didn't have the number of supporters they should have had present for it, which gives you an idea of the makeup of their fan base. And as I said, when you sometimes these games where it's a team that have only won twice away from home, it's a team whose supporters really should be at the rugby, it's a team that are missing some big players, you just too many expected United to win. It doesn't work like that with United anymore. They make hard work of it, even when it's they're making it look easy. They made it look easy for an hour against Wolves. They still needed a 97th minute winner in that game, and this is the problem with them. You look at Villa and you think, okay, they've reacted well to being beaten by United, but they were wobbling. Tottenham and Tottenham, they're prone to wobble. But do you have faith in United to be consistent enough to finish above both of them? No.
I think over the last 6 weeks, this podcast has been overwhelmingly positive. But then I think in like the second part, we've said, look, at the end of the day, still haven't been completely convincing, because there's been elements of the performances that have been concerning. You look at Villa Park and the lack of control. Villa could have equalised, for example. And I mean, the lack of control, we keep on talking about this season, they just don't have it, and that's tactical. Me and Tyrone have sat here and talked about that systematic, that's on Ten Hag. Should have control in games, and they just don't. I mean, for the first whistle, it was just a lack of energy. It was pedestrian, it was lackluster. Yeah, it was really lifeless, wasn't it? And you could see the Fulham goal coming. It was just a surprise that they were leading at half time. Obviously got that goal, and as you said, it took a Fulham goal for United to kind of get a job behind them and get things going, didn't it? And going back to that point about Ten Hag, though, I mean, tactically, that is on him, because at this stage of the, I use the word project, I mean, in quotation marks, but he's been here longer than 18 months now. They should be playing a lot better than that, and there shouldn't be tactical, systematic concerns with the manager.
No, but there are, and that's a big con in the assessment of him, because Ineos will be doing an audit on him. I think everybody expects, unless they get tonked maybe 10-0 by City at the weekend, that he probably will see out the season. But as a colleague said in the press room on Saturday, Ineos are overseeing all these changes in all these different departments. It's kind of illogical if you're keeping the manager or you're not changing manager. And we're talking today is the 26th of February. Of course, this date last year, United had a League Cup final. They ended their trophy drought. They were probably third in the league table, I'd have thought. They'd beaten Barcelona 3 days earlier.
The peak then, didn't they?
That was the peak. Yeah, they were absolutely going in the right direction. Ten Hag said that again on Saturday. And this is the problem with these defeats. They're compounded by some very, very peculiar sound bites that he comes out with, where he's a bit detached from reality. And that wasn't the case last season. If they won, he'd be constructively critical of them. And he has been a couple of times recently, after the Wolves game, I think in particular, he was lamenting the failure to be further ahead. And he did so a little bit at Luton as well. But it seems like he's way more positive when they lose now. And I don't get it. I mean,
is that just pressure, though, surely?
I think there's an element of that probably comes into it. But also, United fans aren't stupid. They've experienced one delusional Dutch manager before, and unfortunately there are parallels with Louis van Gaal in that sense. And look, Ten Hag is by no means a van Gaal acolyte. If anything, he'd like to be as distant from him as possible. But you know, at least with van Gaal, as staid and soporific as the style was that season, they were doing what he wanted. With United, we don't know what the plan is, and it's noticeable he stopped saying stick to the plan since that Brian Gunn's Twitter account did a hilarious montage of the amount of times he'd said it. And it's just as well because nobody knows what the plan is. You look at, I think it might have been the turnover from when Varane played it was a bit of a hospital pass to Casemiro. He gets robbed of the ball, Fulham break, and should have done better with it. You look where Casemiro's position was and where Maynard's position was, and it's like, that does not compute.
You park a bus in the middle of the midfield sometimes, couldn't you?
It's really so easy to ride roughshod over them. And Ten Hag bemoaned, this was also peculiar, in that Ten Hag bemoaned Casemiro's withdrawal, which it would have been before Fulham scored. So it was at 0-0. He came off with a head injury, and he said they lacked stability there. Well, they did have a defensive midfielder on the bench if he wanted stability, and it was a defensive midfielder he'd also signed and also played for him at Utrecht, but in the end, Sofyan Amrabat was unused. But the notion that Casemiro was providing stability was baloney. He, as I said, Fulham were bypassing him as much as Wolves were at the start of the season. And again, that is on the manager. Yes, Casemiro, his form has dropped off hugely this season. He's conceding daft fouls. He was lucky not to get sent off at Luton. And he has to take... He's heavily culpable for his own performances. But also, the manager is not getting the balance right there. And another manager would be getting the balance right.
Do you know, things just feel like Groundhog Day? We've been saying this on the podcast for 3-4 months now. I mean, so their wins earlier on the season weren't convincing. It was been a bit of a miserable first half, obviously. Had picked up in recent weeks, but it very deflating if you're a United fan, that performance. Very deflating. Hoyland's absence was obviously very significant. The ball wasn't sticking. He really brings a physical presence, doesn't he? And he needs a focal point, especially when Marcus Rashford plays down the middle. We've said it time and time again. He cannot play at centre forward, unfortunately. He likes to play on the left. And he almost, I mean, we've said it plenty of times again, but he sulks, doesn't he, when he plays down the middle? And that was evident on Saturday. And Omari Forson, he got the nod. He started on the right. Very raw, Samuel.
I don't know why.
Yeah,
I don't know why he got the nod. And also peculiar in that he was looking to get out of the club last month. There was an outside chance that he was going to get sold, and then suddenly he's parachuted into the first team. Look, I'm not complaining about someone playing ahead of Anthony. I think that's fair enough. Nobody wants to see Anthony starting for United, apart from maybe Anthony's immediate family.
It was his birthday representatives.
Yes, yeah, that was...
My piece just said
that. In a way, he had probably his best and worst at United. That all these players played ahead of him, but he was completely blameless for the defeat. But Forson just... I've never watched him and thought, yeah, he looks ready. And it happens all the time with United managers. They will see something in an academy player that nobody else can see. Van Gaal with Tyler Blackett and Paddy McNair, Mourinho with McTominay at the time, Ralph Rangnick with Anthony Elanga. There's not really a classic case so much with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He just gave debuts to anyone and everyone in Astana at that time, given the illusion that they might have had a future at United. And of course, McTominay has made the most of his chance. He's had a career at United for years. But I don't look at Omari Forson and think that he's going to be a mainstay in the United squad for years.
No, I think his few opportunities and appearances recently might have something to do with him being out of contract and kind of, look, son, put
you get
your arm
that.
Around
yeah.
you. Yeah, there's a future for you here.
That obviously happens a lot of the time, but a manager's got to be selfish. He's got to be putting the players on the pitch who are going to get the result, who are likely to get the result. The problem with that was that in playing him there, it meant that Rashford played up front. Now, I can't remember what our panel teams were, but I mean, this was the quandary.
We all had Garnacho on the right and Rashford on the left. I think Ten Hag's talked about the importance of this kind of rhythm.
You had Ahmad through the middle, didn't you? I had McTominay up top. I can't remember what Rich's choice was.
They've been excellent in those positions. Rashford on the left, Garnacho on the right. Well, maybe not Rashford. Excellent. That's a bit hyperbole there. But you know what I'm trying to say? The good results have came when those players have been in those roles. So it made sense to keep those players in those positions.
Yeah, but in fairness to Garnacho, whose attitude is not not a problem, ironically, for someone who was late to a meeting in pre-season in 2022 and then didn't play at all on that tour. If you play him on the right, he tends to play well. If you play him on the left, he's even better because that is his best role. I didn't think he played well at Luton, but he tries his heart out. He was, as I said, he was the best player at the weekend. There were four yellow cards for Fulham in the first half, and all of them were for fouls on Garnacho, which said it all. And the thing about Rashford that I find really frustrating on behalf of United fans, that going back to pre-season, someone very, very high up at the club was talking about Hoyland and that he wouldn't start every game. He'd play some games. Rashford would play some games. I'm thinking this is a problem for a number of reasons. One, you're paying a lot of money for a player, a striker, who is essentially going to be rotated. You're planning to rotate him. Two, you think Rashford is going to cut it at centre forward. He's not. Three, you've completely discounted Anthony Martial, which is fair enough, but he is on your books. And if he's that scorched earth, shouldn't you be looking to proactively sell him, even though there's a very, very small window? Because it's easy to forget he was fit in August. I think by that point, they could have possibly done something.
He was fit for most of the season. He was actually on the bench. Because when we discussed this, we said, ironically, he's actually been available.
Until early December, But in the summer, of course, he was rehabilitating from his injury for most of it. But I think from the first or second game of the season, he was in the matchday squad. Because you had the Roy Keane, that great quote at Tottenham, didn't he? That, you know, Anthony Martial's coming on, you might as well put on Norman Whiteside or Frank Stapleton, which is a very fair comment at the time. It's aged well as well. But they started this season with essentially one striker who also started the season injured, Hoyland, of course. And then you factor in that he's 20, he's callow, he's going to need time, and it's unfair on him, and he's going to be overburdened, overtaxed. And unfortunately, as most players have at United, he picks up injuries. And this is the other con in terms of not bringing in a proven striker. Harry Kane's not missed a club match through injury in 3 years. Hoyland's had four separate layoffs already this season. I'm not saying that's all on him. It's not. Sometimes these things happen. A back fracture must have been a freak muscular problem. You have to look at the fitness staff, because I think that they're not doing their jobs well enough. Muscular problems should always be avoidable. And of course, United they found goals hard to come by last season. So without a striker this season, and with Rashford's form falling off a cliff, of course they're struggling for goals this season. Their goal difference is still, is it in the minus again, or is it zero? I'm not sure it's in the plus numbers again.
Back to zero. So it was positive for the first time last week since August, since the opening weekend against Wolves. I mean, you were both for that game, which shows how dire it's been.
I thought in the Moyes season alone, they'd exhausted ways of, like, the spectacular ways of losing, and all records had tumbled. But no, it seems like they keep on tumbling.
Casemiro, we'll touch it in before ending this first part. I mean, Ten Hag kind of put it down to that substitution, as you just mentioned, but he wasn't very good again. That back heel, he lost possession, he dispossessed a few times, passing, sloppy.
You could tell when he got robbed of the ball and he was chased back, thought, I don't want to get booked today. And at that point, you'd have thought, actually, you know, take the foul there and take the yellow card, then you've stopped the counter-attack.
Well, someone else wouldn't say that about the second part. But, I mean, with Casemiro, what's your verdict since he's come back? Because, look, we all know last season he was excellent, outstanding. We all thought he was kind of going to be that kind of Bastian Schweinsteiger player. He was world-class. First half of this season...
Well, he was not world-class.
Last season, I'm saying.
No, Schweinsteiger.
I'm saying Casemiro was last season.
Yes, yeah.
I'm saying he could have went into the Schweinsteiger but he didn't. And then, obviously, come back this year, he looked a shade of his former self, picked up that injury, and we all said, look, when he comes back, he's got to pick it up, or maybe a phone call to Saudi Arabia is going to come. But at the moment, it seems like that phone call to Saudi is going to come.
I think they need to have not just had phone calls, they need to have had Zoom calls, Teams meetings, flown out
faxes.
There.
We just talk about a fax machine.
A fax. I think that's still relevant, possibly, for formal offers made to a player. Look, I think the most important signing United make in the summer in terms of the playing staff would be the midfielder to go with Mainoo. Because it's got to be someone who's dynamic, athletic. Ideally, you'd be cherry-picking one of Real Madrid's players, Tchouaméni or Camavinga or Bellingham.
Could have been Declan Rice, couldn't it?
It could have been Declan Rice. Yeah, they've they've had opportunities to get some of these players. It's they can't always say this reason, that reason, or the other reason. And I don't know who that player is. You have to hope, for United's sake, that they've got a very good idea of who that player is. But they're just so exposed in that area. And you know, talking about the amount they had it on Match of the Day, didn't they? The amount of shots that they're being faced this season, it's like it's obscene.
Sheffield United have actually faced more.
It's an obscene number of attempts at goal. And like sometimes if you're playing FIFA, you can, and I've not played FIFA far too long, unfortunately, but you can, you know, it's stats padding. You just have a pop shot from here, there, or anywhere. But with United, it's every time they are gifting chances. And as Rich said, they're a team that rely on the counter attack, but they get countered. And Fulham countered them a lot of times before they finally got it right in the 97th minute with Iwobi's goal, because the structure of the team is just not right. And I think we all agreed when Casemiro came in that he was the, during that period where they had the mini winter break and there was a sense they were going to have their strongest players back, of course Casemiro would go in with Maynou because they hadn't started a competitive game together. And Casemiro has benefited Maynou. He's had some brilliant performances for United, primarily away from home. He's played a bit more advanced, but it's still not ideal. And you're still looking at Casemiro and you think he's got 2 years left on his contract, on the salary he'll be on as well. Can you justify him being a first teamer next season? The answer is no. There's got to be an upgrade there. He is starting to show his age. He is performing as we feared he would perform in his first season, when he was, as I said, he was outstanding. He was talismanic. I thought he was United's best player last season. But the drop off this season, he's not the only one who's had the drop off. It's been stark. And this is the problem United have got. There were just far too many players who performed really well last season who are underperforming this season, the manager included. And if that happens, you're going to fall down the table.
Well, last season was built on a fantastic defensive foundation, and Marcus Rashford
scoring goals,
scoring for fun. Yeah. So, and neither of those have happened this time around.
No, as you say, the problem in terms of their top five outstanding performers last season, you'd have had Martinez, Casemiro in there, probably Varane in there. Those are three defensive players already. Wan-Bissaka had a pretty good second half of the season, another defensive player. In terms of the attacking players, I thought Fernandes was good last season, and Rashford obviously was. But of those regulars, it was only really that those two of the front six players who had really, really, you know, fine seasons, you would say. It was built on a very solid defensive foundation, and already that's going to have to be rebuilt in the summer.
That'll be it for part one, and we'll be back in a moment for part two. Welcome back to part two of the Manchester Is Red podcast, and we're going to get a bit into more of that performance and what went wrong at the end with Harry Maguire, I guess it's fair to say, because he comes up 89th minute, scores that goal. It was a striker's finish. He is a goal threat, to be fair, and he always looks capable from corners, doesn't he? But we were just discussing how Fulham actually scored in added time, because the ball was out of front. I didn't actually realise. I thought it was for a counter-attack at the time, typing away. But the break forward, and Maguire, he actually has two opportunities to bring down Traore, I think, to begin with, and Traore bursts a bit forward, and he could have done it again. Obviously, Maguire was on a yellow card, so it would have meant he was sent off. I guess it's easy to say in hindsight, but it would have been a sensible thing to do, because it probably would have prevented a defeat. Well, it would have probably.
Well, even without hindsight, I remember thinking at the time,
I think when Traore
was within reach, I was just thinking, like, you've got to take him out here because no one's catching him. And I know he can be erratic, Traore, and he might not make the pass. But at the corner of my eye, I could see Fulham players overload and United on that side. And I thought it's difficult. It'd be difficult not to. You'd have to do something really wrong not to find a teammate there, and he had to do it, Maguire. And look, it's not all on him, that goal, but he is heavily culpable for it, because he gets too tight to Muniz. This was what United were doing. They were playing on emotion. They were playing. You know, they were thriving on the chaos. There was no structure to it. It was, we're Man United. We've got a late equaliser. We're in Fergie time. We're kicking the door to splinters. It's coming. We're going to get the ball. Yeah, absolutely. They overcommitted. They were out of position. Ten Hag said about a player being out of position, which might have been Lindelof, because it looked like he cramped up when he was the one who conceded the throw-in.
We were just talking about that, because Ten Hag kind of, it was diplomatically discussed what went wrong with that goal, and he said it was someone out of position, it's up for us to coach him better. And I've kind of watched it back, and perhaps it is Lindelof, but he picked up cramp or an injury, so is it hard to blame him for that?
Yeah, well, and also Lindelof, in look, he didn't play well at the weekend, but it was a bad pass from Fernandes, and he slides towards the ball to keep it, to prevent it from going out for a goal kick, so it goes out for throw-in. So, and he got a round of applause for it, one for the commitment, and also United fans thought, well, we've got them pending.
Exactly,
here.
You shouldn't be conceding.
We've got them pending in their own corner, yeah. Right by the tunnel at the Stretford end. We'll get the ball back here and we'll create another chance. And Fulham played it, they played it brilliantly. I think it was Castagne who took the throw-in. Muniz holds it up, lays it off, ball goes to Traore. Traore goes from 0 to 60 in God knows how many seconds, and it was a really good finish from Iwobi. But this happened against Wolves. Wolves scored a similar goal when they equalised to make it 3-3 at the start of the month. So United's month has been bookended by them conceding identical goals. They got away with it at Wolves because of the brilliance of Mainoo with that winning goal a couple of minutes later. They didn't get away with it on Saturday, and that kind of encapsulates them in that they're that erratic, and the 5-game winning streak gave the illusion that they want to, you know, they were now consistent, and we all had the sense that the performances just didn't tally with, they didn't marry with the results. Like Wolves, they were brilliant for 45 minutes or an hour, but in the end they need a 97th minute winner. I thought West Ham were actually quite good at Old Trafford, but United were efficient. It didn't feel like a 3-0 win, but it's a good 3-0 win. Villa battered them, and they'd have rued getting a point from that. Never mind, they ended up losing it to United. Luton unnerved United in the first half, and they could have had a last-minute equaliser, even though United had a lot of good chances on the counter in the second half. So there's not been one game where you thought, yeah, they've really cracked it here. Because even the West Ham game, which was a rare, like, relatively straightforward one to write, where they won 3-0, West Ham had chances.
Which performances have been the most dominant? I think of Chelsea at home.
That was probably, from start to finish, the most dominant. And Chelsea had five really good chances.
Even then, I remember, yeah, we said in the podcast it was a great performance, but Chelsea could have, Sterling missed the big one, didn't he? It was a chance.
Broglie hit the post in added time, so I think, yeah.
They're still conceding a worrying rate of chances, even when they're playing well. It's worth mentioning Anthony. He came on
to
the
great story
for the last 45 seconds a minute. 86 million signing from Ajax. He's been here now for 18 months as well. But he's getting overlooked for Omari Fawson and Ahmad, who are 19 and 21 respectively. That is his low point, surely, Samuel. That is as bad as he gets.
Yeah, as I said, he had a dreadful day, and he had a good day in that there were three players essentially ahead of him playing on the right wing now. But he was, you couldn't blame him for that defeat at the weekend, and that was the only positive for him. But when Ten Hag is doing that, look, in fairness to Ten Hag, he could have been doing what he was doing at the start, in the first months of the season, when he just played Anthony regardless because he was his man. Then he realised that I can't justify this anymore. And look, he's been bold enough to say, look, I don't, even though he's coming on my watch and we spent this money for him, if he's not up to it, I'm not going to play him. But you've got to make the right call in terms of who does replace him. And he's not done that with Fawson. So unfortunately for Ten Hag, that call was undermined, because a lot of fans would have said, oh good, like the majority of predicted lineups on Saturday morning would have had Anthony in them, Anthony on the right, Garnacho on the left, Rashford up front, and of course Anthony doesn't start. I think that would have generated approval from United fans, but then it was undermined by Fawson coming in. I thought Ahmad did all right again when he came on, but that was the first time we'd seen him since the Forest game, and that was in late January, so that was, it was almost 2 months since he'd last played, and he's only missed a couple of games through illness, I think it was. So it obviously throws up the question as to what happens on Wednesday, because they're going back to Forest, and Anthony was cheered off that night. Ahmad came on, did quite well. Do you put Anthony in for that game? I don't think anybody would want to see Anthony in for that game, but also you can't be starting Omari Fawson.
Is it past the point of no return with Anthony? You never want to write a player off, because it does feel quite unfair.
I have written him off.
Yeah, I know. We've said it a few times on the podcast, but he's just shown far too little. I mean, he's not got a goal or assist in the league this season. It's almost March.
Look, there are more SEC filings in a day from United than there have been Premier League goals from Anthony. He's not scored a Premier League goal since, coincidentally, Forest away in April last year. He's got one goal this season. He's got one assist this season. Both of them came against a League Two team in an FA Cup tie. If the evidence is just completely, it stacks up as to, exactly. And this is the tragicomic thing about United as well, that it does write itself. Like as I said to Rich on Friday, the last time they lost a game was the last time Højlund was absent. And of course, Højlund's absent on Saturday and they lose for the first time since that Forest match. So it's, as I said earlier about, you know, this record still tumble with United, they also have these very original ways of, you know, writing bad headlines or writing bad pieces for to come with a defeat.
In terms of what the defeat actually means for Ten Hag, we kind of alluded to it in the first part and the tactical concerns that we all have and that we see each week, unfortunately. We said he was auditioning for his job in the next 3 months. And results are all well and good, but I think we made the point that the performances and the way the sustainability of the performances has to be better. So the pressure is really going to start cranking up. I mean, London Forest midweek, then Man City, it could be a huge, huge 7 days.
It's a huge week because the FA Cup is the only trophy they have left to play for. And a derby is always huge. It doesn't feel like that big a derby at the moment, and it probably still won't at the weekend, purely because City is so far ahead of United. And I think earlier in the season, you had the poignance of Sir Bobby Charlton's recent death. And of course, Francis Lee just passed away as well. So there was some poignance attached to that. But unlike the second league derby last season, when the teams were neck and neck, it's completely different now. Already, United have fallen away hugely. And this could be the week where it does really turn against Ten Hag. I think there needs to be a managerial change at some point this calendar year. I've stopped short of writing the piece that he should be sacked, because who do you bring in at this point? You can't do the Ralph.
Well, I think we've all agreed he probably doesn't feel like any else's man, but for right now, it's not made any sense to sack him, because there's no point getting interim, as you said, and there's no replacements out there. If you actually look at the managerial market, there's going to be a merry-go-round in the summer, isn't it, with top managers?
I think there was, I can't remember who wrote it about Crystal Palace, and they said that there was, on Graham Potter and Steve Cooper's part, there was a reluctance from both of them to go into a job mid-season. And I imagine they're quite, and those two obviously don't have a job at the moment. And I imagine that's the case with a lot of managers who will probably be back in employment next season, that they want to come in May and then hit the ground running, have a summer, a proper pre-season, rather than come in.
It's a massively sad state of affairs that probably the main reason to keep Ten Hag in his job right now is because there's not a lack of alternative, just for the sake of it.
It's another, it reflects damningly on him as well. But that's, sometimes you just have to play the politics of it. And look, is there a break clause in his contract regarding Champions League qualification? Because if you don't get Champions League qualification as a Manchester United manager, usually that means you're toast. The only exception was Solskjaer, and that was because he was appointed permanently in the March. And I think they probably underestimated how drastic the spiral was about to be. It was, of course, after he was made permanent manager that they lost, what was it? I think they only won two of their last 12 games that season. So the timing was, I mean, everyone knows they made the wrong decision in making him permanent manager in the March anyway. But with Ten Hag, if you're looking at last season, which was a successful season, and he keeps on referring back to it as well, which I don't think is really helping his case, but the trajectory was good. They'd won a trophy. They'd got to another final. They'd finished third. If you're finishing low in the table, if you're finishing outside the Champions League qualifying places, if you've not won a trophy, and if you've had all these defeats this season, I mean, how many defeats they had? I think they've had 15 defeats, it might be.
10 and 26 in the league, yeah. And two draws. But obviously, all competitions, you look at it, and it's almost 50-50.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. They've not mastered his style, whatever that is. his signings have been really bad by and large. It's stacked up against him. He's you know, you're hoping for his sake this February period would be the period where it galvanizes the team, and it coincided quite well with the Ratcliffe getting regulatory approval and then coming on board officially and being present in Manchester as well. But I think it's a really tall order for United to, you know, to try and recover now and get the number of points that would be required to finish above Villa and Tottenham, as flaky as those two teams could be. Because, as I said, Villa were they were wobbling before United turned up at Villa Park, and Tottenham are Tottenham. They're always prone to throwing it away. But Spurs don't have any European football, which will be a big advantage. It will also be pressure on them as well, and we know that they don't deal with pressure. But they're not coming up against, you know, it's not like Manchester United are this behemoth who are lurking or ready to gobble everyone up. It doesn't work like that anymore.
I mean, you look at Tottenham's game last month, it was 2-2 obviously, and they rocked up to Old Trafford without their best players, yeah. Played them off the park. Fulham have just done it again, no Paulinho, no Willian, played them off the park. Tottenham are on 47, so United obviously three behind, but Tottenham was engaged with Chelsea this weekend, yeah. So yeah, they've obviously got a game in hand. So potentially if they win that, obviously United could be six behind fifth. There's obviously the quirk this season that there could be a Champions League place in fifth position, depending on how English teams perform in Europe. So that would look even worse, wouldn't it, if there is an extra Champions League place and United still don't get it?
Look, I remember when Liverpool were mocked for finishing third in 2001 and getting Champions League football. Like, it was seen as a joke that three teams from a country could qualify for a competition called the Champions League, and you're rewarded in the third place. I mean, I think it's preposterous that finishing fifth in any league should be rewarded with Champions League lucre. And I don't necessarily think it should spare a manager either. In Ten Hag's case, it's not so much taking the back door into Champions League. You're going in through the cat flap there. It would be embarrassing.
We've made the point multiple times. There's no point in going back into the competition and crashing out in the group stage.
And United have done that far too often in the last 10 years. They did it under Solskjaer. They did it under Van Gaal. And that's another valid point. When you go in the Champions League, you've got to have the belief and also fuel the supporters with the belief that you can do something in it. You just didn't have that sense with United going into the competition this season. You know, it was a testing group when the draw was made. I didn't think that they would they'll finish second because Bayern Munich will finish first. There were clearly some very testing away games.
I thought that.
Did you think?
Maybe naively.
Yeah. I didn't expect Galatasaray to win at Old Trafford.
Copenhagen with the surprise package, they were actually so well organised. Yeah, it's bizarre because they're struggling in their division around the
league. Their manager said after they beat United, he said that was our weakest game of the four they'd had in the Champions League at that time. Jakob Nystrup, I think his name is, who's like very, very impressive coach. I think there's every chance he'll end up in England at some point. But as you say, it's yesteryear, and look, I know it's easy to hark back to the past, but yesteryear it was a foregone conclusion that United would get out of the group, and it was just a case of how deep they'd go into the competition. And again, it doesn't work like that anymore.
I think at the start of Ten Hag's reign, we used Arteta as an example multiple times and talked about this kind of rebuilding patience. Look at what Arsenal are doing in the Champions League now. I actually think they'll go quite deep in the competition, providing, I know they lost 1-0 against Porto.
You'd still expect them to turn it around.
Yeah, against Porto. I think they're a proper team this season.
No away goal rule or anything like that. So
that'll be it for part two, and we'll be back in a moment for part three. Welcome back to part three of the Manchester Is Red podcast. Now, just a quick shout to Rich and Tyrone's podcast with James Weir, former United player, of course. He's got a fantastic story. Played a bit under Van Gaal, left the club, played for a few other sides, and he eventually ended up in Eastern Europe, I believe. But he came into MEN's offices and did a sit-down interview with Ty and Rich, and that's going out on Wednesday in the midweek episode, so make sure to check that out. It should be very good. Samuel, back to the football. Obviously, FA Cup game on Wednesday, Nottingham Forest. Big game, huge game because of the loss at the weekend. Regarding changes, personnel, I think obviously striker is another talking point, isn't it? Would you play McTominay there? As you did. Did you have him as striker?
I did.
Did you have a right back?
I did. This
you
was
a right back originally.
The you obviously tempted fate before the Hoyland news that you'd
compiled.
Well,
what a stupid panel. Comment. Basically, for the listeners, we do a panel as we talk about quite a bit,
which is our personal 11, not
yes,
a predicted
what
11.
We'd like to see. But I'm in charge of actually putting the players in. And on Friday morning, I put a message in saying there won't be any team news. It all looks set. And I mean, Rasmus Højlund. Maybe I'm to blame for his muscle injury.
The one injury they could not afford, yeah.
Who are you going to play it from? Who would you like to see?
Well, I had McTominay down at right back, and then he went up front after the Højlund news, which just gives you an idea of the pickle United are in with some of their injuries. But I would start him probably up front. I mean, Rashford is playing by default at the moment. Starting by default, he obviously scored a lovely goal against Wolves, perfect timing after the Belfast trip, and he's not kicked on. And I think there've been certain players who people have thought they're doing well, they're not. Harry Maguire has not really been doing well. He's had one good game against Aston Villa. He did all right against West Ham, but he gave them two chances. He was hooked at half time against Luton. At the weekend, he was culpable for the winning goal. It's been mixed at best for him. With Rashford, he scored one goal this month. He's got five goals this season. If United had a much stronger attack, he wouldn't be starting. But yeah, Ten Hag chose to have a thin attack because he doesn't use Pelistri. And when Pelistri did start, he didn't look up to it. He's underused Ahmad. Look, I think we all know that Rashford will start on Wednesday. But it's almost getting to the point where maybe it's worth another question at the Ten Hag's press conference as to, you know, what's going on there, because he's not kicked on at all.
Well, he not just uses default answer when he says the goals will come. He's getting the repetitions, because there's been a lot of questions on Rashford this season.
Well, it was interesting on Friday because there was a bit of back and forth about the striker situation, and Ten Hag called a colleague of mine naive.
Who asked that question?
It was James Duffy.
Right, yeah. Saw the clip.
Obviously, the press conference video is out there, and I think, you know, certain voices are recognisable, but he was obviously making the point about not signing a second striker. And I have some sympathy with Ten Hag there, in that it was never going to happen in the summer. They were never, ever going to sign another striker after... They were always going to invest big in a striker, and that was obviously Højlund. They were never going to get anyone else in, because Marshall, as Ten Hag said, was effectively prohibiting them from doing that, because he is a striker and also he's on big wages. So you can't have three number nines there. A mate of mine who was at the game, is a season ticket holder, he was trying to convince me on Saturday that United need three strikers. I said, look, I don't think even National League teams have three number nines these days. That's not the way clubs operate, and I don't think they should operate that way. It's absolutely have two of them. But obviously, you know, Ten Hag was giving us this spiel about it, and I agreed with most of his points, because we saw it coming at the time. I wasn't agreeing that they didn't sign two strikers. I thought that's what they did need. And of course, Ten Hag wanted one in January, but that was a no-go because of FFP and profitability and sustainability rules. Because they've spent such an obscene amount in recent years and had such a... It's not computed with the poor returns they've had on sales as well. And now they're in this... You know, mini crisis again. Certainly a striker crisis, because they don't have one. The only out and out striker they've got available is Charlie McNeil, isn't it?
We've discussed that. He obviously had a stint at Stevenage, which didn't work out. He's come back. I think he had a knock. He only came on from the bench against the City's on the 21s, and he didn't look very sharp when he came on. I think it's fair to say as well.
His contract must be up in the summer, mustn't it? Possibly.
I think when you look at that Youth Cup group, obviously he made his debut shortly after, he's not really kicked on. Obviously you've got Garnacho, Mainu, Gore. I'd fancy Gore to kind of have a better career than McNeil, as things stand anyway.
But look, I think Ten Hag has got to be creative, and he's used that word before regarding selections, and he wanted to be creative with Forsson. It just didn't work out. Casemiro's headed.
Look at Ahmad though, right, Samuel? Last season, fantastic look, right? I mean, forcing a few appearances in pre-season didn't really impress much. How is he getting training performances have a lot to do with it, and Ten Hag sees the players more than we do.
Yeah.
But based on last season alone, Ahmad should be getting the chance. Especially because we're looking at this now and thinking, right, if he doesn't, he's going to be out the door shortly. Because Ahmad's looking at that and he's getting his nose turned up at it and he's thinking, why am I not playing?
I think sometimes the manager probably has to take a step back. It's for their own benefit and just look at the, I don't like using the word, but look at the optics of it. Like, should I be using this
very
callow...
Jay Humphrey of you there.
I know, yeah. Should I be using this raw kid over someone who cut it in the Championship last season, which is seen as quite a good gauge of a player who might be able to hack it in the first team and who showed some promise against Forest a couple of months ago. And then he's obviously thinking, well, this is a player who I've hothoused here in force and I've given him his opportunities and I'm developing him and I think he can do something. And look, it didn't come off at the weekend. And I think it was obviously it wasn't going to come off. I'd have been surprised if Forson had really impressed, just because I've not been particularly convinced by him when I have seen him play. And of course, friendlies are not a reliable gauge of a player's qualities or worth. But it is strange that here's a player who was punitively substituted against Borussia Dortmund in Las Vegas because he was having run-ins with Dortmund players, and a player who was. Yeah, open to leaving permanently last month, and then there he is starting in a really important Premier League game. It's odd. It's not going to happen, but I would like to see Ahmad get fulfilling minutes, meaningful minutes in a United shirt. But there's so much at stake this week that, in terms of like, do I think it will happen? No, but should it be considered? Yes. I don't think Lindelof at left back, I mean, it almost makes you weep, really, on behalf
there's
of
no, there's no other options, though, that's the thing.
Well,
I'd rather have Lindelof there than Amrabat. That's what I said in my panel. Yeah, I know it's boring, but...
I was discussing this with Rich, and I've said this before, but it's in the film Argo, you know, they're trying to come up with a solution to get the Americans out of Iran, and it's like, this is the best bad idea we have, and it's... They are in the Argo situation again. They've had six players play at left back this season. We counted. I think it's Shaw, Reguilón, Lindelof, Amrabat, Wan-Bissaka, Dalot. And of course, he doesn't want to lose Dalot down the right because until, I thought he was poor at the weekend, but until then he'd been doing quite well at right back. But I think it has come to a point now that if you are to play Lindelof, just play him at right back because he's right footed. And but then again, he came off with cramp or an injury at the weekend.
Yeah, looked like
Casemiro had a head injury, so I think there'll be, you know, there'll be some revealing team news from Ten Hag at Carrington tomorrow lunchtime.
I mean, we know what McTominay is, we know what he can do, and he's in fantastic goal scoring form, but with Ahmad, we don't know where his ceiling is, and I'm intrigued to see when I don't think we're going to find out, unfortunately, at United, but I'd love to see him up front in the FA Cup game. It would be a big call for some in the derby, obviously, but I think for the FA Cup game, it would make sense for me.
Well, having said that, like, Forest have got quite physical defenders, and I would think, well, pit McTominay against them.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the other thing. Like, I think,
but then he's played in the Championship, and he was still scoring loads of goals.
He was.
It's a physical division. I think you just got to give him a chance.
Yeah.
Ironically, I actually thought he should have went alone this season until he got his injury. I was leaning towards that way, but. Yeah, but now he's back and you've got him in the squad. I think you've just got to play him. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. Nottingham Forest, obviously struggling in the Premier League. Nuno Espirito Santo came and took over. Their results have been mixed. 4-2 against Aston Villa at the weekend. Went 3-0 down, 3-2, 4-2 in the end. But, I mean, United have a very good record against Forest. They've won every game since they've came up back to the Premier League.
Forest. United have?
Yeah. Oh, no. Close. Go on.
Forest, congrats. Obviously.
It was
only 2 months ago that Forest beat them. A lot's happened since, don't worry. Well, that was Forest's first win against United since 1992.
Yeah, I think marked that performance out of my mind.
The Cobby Mayne game.
Just rubbish. Yeah, taking them off.
Forest have got some mercurial players, I think it's fair to say, and that if United were on song, you'd have utmost confidence. Even if United had won unconvincing at the weekend, you'd have utmost confidence in them beating Forest away in the cup. But it's a cliche.
Well, the Carabao Cup game with Forest, that was just a non-event.
It's not an event. It was, what was it, 5-0 aggregate in the end?
Yeah, it was just so comfortable.
Yeah, it was over after the first.
I don't think we're expecting that to on Wednesday night.
No, well, this is the thing with United. They very rarely win by a 2-goal margin as well. I think that's happened 5 times this season. It has happened a few times in cup games, if supporters are seeking an omen. But they've not convinced twice against Forest this season. Even when they beat them back in August, they were 2-0 down after, what was it, 3 or 4 minutes in that game, which is another game that you think back how far ago that was. It was so long ago that Jadon Sancho actually played in it, and it's entirely in keeping with how they've been performing recently and how their season has gone. In some ways, it's kind of, even though it's only the third game of the season, it somewhat set the tone for it. It's as cliched as it sounds, this tie on Wednesday could go one of two ways. There are players at Forest. You can see Elanga getting himself up for it. He played pretty well against United at the City Ground in December. If Forest hit their cues at the right moments, it could be their night.
They'll be smelling blood. They really will, and they've got. Yeah. I mean, Morgan Gibbs-White, he's a wonderful player. Alanga's been playing well, and he'll definitely be up for the game. They've got the pace and the kind of dynamism to hurt United, don't they, really?
It depends on the team Ten Hag picks.
But we know surely what the team's going to be. I mean...
Really?
Well, roughly.
Well,
it's going to be very similar.
Casemiro and Lindelof,
I think he'll be fit from his comments. I mean, Casemiro will be fit from Ten Hag's comments after the game. If Lindelof doesn't have a knock... I know you kind of, I've contradicted myself there of doing certainties, but I think both of those players will be.
So you think it will be
the contentious point is up front.
You think he'll be one change for someone for Forson?
Yeah. That's why. Well, we'll see. Come Wednesday.
We shall. Yes.
I'll get a message off you.
I don't think it's a ridiculous prediction.
What else can he change? He's surely not going to start Eriksen or Amrabat in midfield.
No, well, it went a bit under the radar, but Eriksen was so bad.
He has been for a few weeks, hasn't he?
He's been a bit off. He's not played for weeks as well, which, okay, you can afford him that, but his legs are gone. He's under contract until next year, but you would also be looking, is there a way of getting him?
Well, there was talk of some Turkish interest, wasn't it, in January, and I can kind of see that happen. Or maybe a romantic turnaround.
You get quite a lot of flies from Turkey. He kind of fits the profile, like over the hill Premier League player. There are plenty of them in Istanbul, never mind Turkey. It's a shame again with him, because I think he had a good first season, but apart from that second half against Copenhagen at Old Trafford, I'm struggling to think of a really, really good performance he's had for United this season. But as you alluded to, it could just be the one change. I would certainly, I'd be hoping, if I'm a United fan in that away end tomorrow night, I'd be hoping for more than one change on the back of that performance at the weekend.
What would they be? What was it? Genuine question.
Anyone but Lindelof at left back.
I agree, you'd ideally like to make changes, but what are the alternatives? And especially after a defeat to Fulham, you want to see changes, but it's probably just going to be one of them.
Dallo at left back, Willy Kambwala at right back.
I'd rather have Lindelof at right back still than Kambwala. Your quote about the film, the best one.
We are kind of like remaking this is a bad remake of Argo here. But the mad thing is, you look at United's bench at the weekend, and it's not inexpensive, it's not inexperienced either, bar Toby Collier, of course. And if a manager is there to be creative, and look, when Benjamin Mendy got injured all those years ago after City spent 50-odd million on him, Pep Guardiola has since got by without an out-and-out left-back, it feels like. He made Zinchenko into a left-back. And again, Rich and I, this was half-joking. We were like, well, this is Anthony's true calling as a left-back.
Don't even want to entertain this point. You both kind of mentioned it last week. I'm not entertaining playing Anthony at fullback. And I think on that bombshell, as Jeremy Clarkson says, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Samuel.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to the listeners. We'll be back on Wednesday and for a special Derby pre-podcast on Friday afternoon. Take care.